morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We have a full house today.
Full studio. My cousin Tina over here. We want to say good morning to, I want to say good morning to Rimrock, McGuireville, Camp Verde, Jerome.
We have a Jeromian in Camp Verde.
We have a Jeromian in the studio this morning we're going to talk about. I want to say howdy to the people that have howdy written on the side of their shed in Cornville. They've been driving by it for, I don't know, 30 years. Then they've been saying howdy to me, so I want to say howdy to them in Cornville, Arizona, and, of course, Cottonwood. And we'll start talking. Next week I'm going to do neighborhoods, so you're really going to be in trouble. Who we got this morning, Steve?
Well, first we've also got Silent Gary LeMaster here. Our major researcher and semi-thoughtful human being. No, he's very, very good. Our guest today is a candidate. We'll let her introduce herself.
It's an election year. We're going to have a lot of candidates.
We are.
We're kicking it off with Nikki Bagley.
That's true. And she's the former mayor of Jerome and a former city council person. And she's running for the state senate.
I am. Yeah, thank you very much for having me today. I'm excited to be here and tell you a little bit more about my campaign. So I'm from Prescott, and actually my mom is from Yuma. I think that makes me a second-generation Arizonan, and I have lived in the Verde Valley since 2008 and, kind of got into politics by accident, I would say. So I was something of a reluctant politician at first, but, I stepped up to serve on the town council in Jerome, and it really turned into something.
Most listeners would consider the reluctance a good thing.
I hope so. But I really found that I was an effective leader, and I really learned that I could make a difference in my community and in my state. And so when this opportunity arose, I thought, now's the time. I'm going to go ahead and make a run for the state senate because I know that I'd make a great senator.
Well, that's great. That's we think you'll make a great senator.
Good.
The name of the show is Democratic Perspective, by the way, and you're running as a Democrat.
Indeed.
Okay, yeah. Just checking.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your tenure in Jerome. You run for city council first, and then you run for mayor, and you're mayor for a while. What were the issues in Jerome that would affect the rest of the district? Is there anything kind of parallel to what the other issues are in the district? Was it a lot of practical problems as mayor?
Yeah, well, first I'll go back to the actual election. I was appointed in the beginning for an 8-month stint, and then I put my papers in for the next election, and you don't run for mayor, you just run for council. So I received the most votes and was appointed to being mayor. I found that there were a lot of things happening that interfaced with the state, and it was really important. I was, fairly active in working with the League of Cities and Towns to sort of band together as small communities and go ahead and look at issues that were facing us coming down from the state, like the HERF funds, trying to step up and protect the HERF funds, the highway user relief funds, and also protect our state parks. And within Jerome itself, there were several sort of high-profile issues going on, and I felt like I did a very good, pragmatic job dealing with issues and reaching
like
out to people.
Like sewers and potholes.
I have my updated shots, and so... no, seriously, but being on town council in Jerome often means helping fix the sewer system.
Well, in Jerome, yeah, working council member has a whole new definition because, it's just people think of Jerome as being a kind of a tourist place in a small town, but it has big city problems.
Right. In fact, it was built, you know, for, as a city for 15,000, and
exactly.
having a tax base of 450. You know, there are some challenges there. Luckily, the town actually is entirely gravity operated, and so we actually had a pretty functional system once there's water in the tanks and everything. So we were able to partner with regional governments and also utilize NACOG grant money to refurbish our water tanks. That was an undertaking in and of itself. I mean, we didn't know how we were going to get crews up on the mountain where the water tanks were because there wasn't a road. So we actually ended up, you know, helicoptering in some resources. So
wow.
we had to be creative and really work together.
Yeah.
And Jerome seems very successful right now as a tourist destination. It's gotten more and more crowded, I guess, when we drive through there. Sometimes we can't find parking to have lunch or something.
Right, and parking is one of the major issues. And so we were able to secure the 300-level parking lot, which is the larger parking lot behind the fire station there. And a project that I was, you know, very behind was getting a sidewalk out there because it was, you know, not the safest journey for our tourists to
Absolutely.
Be taking. And so we partnered with the county and had a ton of great volunteers to make sure that project happened.
Jerome is really pretty successful now as a small town and as a tourist destination. I mean, it's economically revived from being almost a ghost town, what, 30 years ago?
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, you know, besides the Grand Canyon and Sedona, I think Jerome is next on the list of being, you know, the top attraction in the county. So
that makes it different. Even though the town is like 450 people, you've got, what, a million visitors coming through?
Yeah, 1.4 million people coming through the town. So that adds another dimension to infrastructure as well.
Yeah, in northern Arizona, when Steve uses the word successful, you know, I mean, if a town keeps the water running and keep the garbage picked up, that's successful. But also, because we're so tourist-oriented, we're sitting here in Sedona.
I think Jerome is a perfect metaphor for the state of Arizona.
How so?
In that Jerome has been gradually sliding downhill for many, many years.
And, there you go.
And,
there you
go. and figuratively, Arizona has been doing the same. So.
Well, and the only thing that keeps it from falling off the mountain is the creativity and the dedication of some of its stellar citizens. So you cut your teeth in Jerome, your political teeth in Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're ready to throw your hat into the statewide ring. Nikki, you spell that with an I or a Y?
It's N-I-K-K-I.
Okay, because we want people to recognize it on the ballot.
And it's also important to remember that as mayor, I was Nikki Check. So it's actually Nikki Check Bagley probably on the ballot.
Right. Why are you doing this? I mean, come on now. This is the Arizona legislature. We're talking about the laughingstock of the entire nation. And you want to be? We want to join.
That's a big reason why I would like to join.
Do you have an armed militia backing you, like some of our other legislators?
Right.
Are you going to go running to Bend or Burns, Oregon?
Someone did ask my mother if she was getting security.
Wow.
No, the real reason is actually the same reason that led me to step down from being mayor. I was pregnant and actually stepped off of council 2 weeks before my baby came. I was very dedicated to being on council, and I moved in with my husband, who, you know, really wanted me to move in with him, and so I thought I was getting out of politics for just a little bit, but having a baby really made me realize we need to start looking long-term at our policy in Arizona, and somebody needs to step up to the plate and represent children and working families for the future, not just the next couple of years, but the next 10, 25 years.
Your opponent, who is the incumbent, ran on several occasions on education and jobs, yet never proposed a single bill for either, and is now she's a chair of the education committee. I think maybe a recent mom is more qualified to deal with the issues of education in the future.
Well, she cares about it. I mean, to go back to that, the LD6 candidates, you're running an LD6 campaign on education issues, and have not, I mean, it's like, you're talking about the biggest of campaign joke hoaxes, the biggest of campaign lies.
The word education has never crossed their lips since they were elected.
And I got to lay this, and I'm going to do the same thing when you're down there, Nikki. This is at the feet of the Senate Education Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Our governors have been hopeless when it comes to education. So that committee dictates a lot of what happens in education as far as financing goes, as far as policy goes. So whatever Arizona education is or isn't, what's our ranking? 50th?
50th.
And you talk to some board members, they say 51st. They believe Guam puts more money in education than Arizona.
Well, don't forget bankrupt Puerto Rico.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I don't know how you get lower than that. And then they scratch their head, Nikki, and wonder why business won't move here. Why, you know, I can't. So, yes. For your baby, please do something about Arizona schools. Traditional Democratic issues, healthcare, education, and workers' rights.
Economic development.
Yeah.
Small business support.
Right.
Your small-town experience certainly gives you some help in those areas, especially economic. So are you another tax and spend liberal, or what's the story here?
Well, I do pride myself on being, slightly fiscally conservative. As a mayor, I was able to balance the budget every year and simply using prioritization behind that and partnerships whenever possible. You know, I want to make sure that public dollars are being spent effectively and really having a return on investment, you know, as much as we possibly can. I definitely don't want to be cutting any taxes at this point. Maybe some, you know, future day when we're, you know, riding the high dollars again. But at this point, we need to be investing. I don't think there's any room to be cutting taxes at this point.
Yeah, you don't want to cut your revenue stream when your schools are falling apart or your water system is falling apart or whatever. But the ideologically driven opposition sometimes doesn't quite get that.
I think we should mention that Nikki is works for Yavapai College in Clarkdale with the teaching enology, right? The winemaking.
Yeah, and so, of course, being mayor of Jerome, you don't get a whole lot in your paycheck. In fact, it's entirely volunteer, that work. And so I did always have a full-time job as the director of viticulture and enology, now just viticulture. So I'm on the wine growing end. So I'm actually a farmer here and started in 2008 building the Verde Valley wine industry by planting grapes and hoeing Bermuda grass and doing all of the wonderfully romantic aspects of economic development. But it's really paid off. And actually, you know, the success of the Verde Valley wine industry and the Arizona wine industry is totally tied to good legislative action. You know, deregulation of that industry was a really good move, and it took a ton of work. If it weren't for bills that were passed in 1979 and in 2005 to help small businesses actually sell their product. I mean, for example, in 2004, there were a few wineries operating here. They had invested in their vineyards already, invested in building a winery, and the state came back. The Liquor Control Department said, you know, you actually can't sell your wine.
Right. I remember that.
Because there's not a method of taxing it. No one had ever thought somebody would like to direct market their wine. And it was held up. You know, they were looking at fighting the distributors, the middlemen. And the liquor lobbyists were no small group at that time.
John McCain.
Exactly. Yeah. And so thank goodness that we were able to have some foresight there, open up that industry. And without spending a single incentive dollar, we were able to create a $50 million industry in the Verde Valley alone.
I think that's true. We run down the Arizona legislature a lot, deservedly so. But the one thing they've done right is they listened to the wine farmers and the winemakers and have passed legislation that made the industry possible.
We shouldn't overlook the fact the other benefit of electing Nikki is if she gets elected and the legislature still doesn't change, we still have the same crackpot bills that come out of it every year. She can make us all wine and keep us all drunk.
There you go. That's a, well, 40% of the Arizona legislature is Democratic at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's, far as I'm concerned, majority is not that far away.
We only need to swing two seats, I believe it is, or three, to bring the legislature into some moderate middle ground, which I think would, or that two parties would actually have to talk with one another, where the Republicans couldn't just ignore the Democrats.
The wine growing, you know, the thing, folks, is that what seems like one industry created what happened in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
We watched Old Cottonwood, Old Town Cottonwood. We watched it try to become something and drop back down, and try to become something and drop back down. And it was the support of all the tasting rooms and the wineries that have allowed the whole town to take off and now become a major tourist destination.
We have to say it was part of it. We have to give Jim Ledbetter, moving his law practice down there, and Eric Jurison opening like 6,000 restaurants in three blocks.
Yeah.
Also gets credit.
Well, and that's just it. You have to have people working together, and you have to have people sharing a cohesive vision, for all the way from the entrepreneur, all, you know, to the policymaker. And so I would like to see the state look for other opportunities. I think there are more opportunities in agriculture right now. There's a lot of new emerging industries that could use some support and could use some legislators backing them.
Right. The Verde Valley has a agri economy history. You know, when I first moved here in 1972, the four corners of there at 260 and 89A, there were no buildings on them. There was Mangini's cows on one corner, and the other three corners were empty pastures. So there is, and then the Yavapai Apache had a whole agronomy history also. Being close to the river.
It's important to have someone who understands economic development, has helped work economic development in the legislature. I think we have somebody who's hands-on, tried to do this and been successful at it. That is a really would be a real plus down in the legislature.
I don't think you can overlook the fact. I think, you know, Nikki makes a great point, and you do too, is that we always, it seems like Arizona always tries to, their economic development concept is to try to steal businesses from other states. And, you know, by keep cutting taxes and try to bring in businesses. The thing is, if we ever get any businesses that way, they tend to be the lowest paying jobs. And by looking at building our own industries and building our own businesses, like the wine industry, we actually have better opportunities to create higher paying jobs and build the state economy.
Just to prove that we don't prepare a lot, Fred Duvall, Democratic candidate for governor in the last cycle, one of his issues, one of his economic ideas was trade with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
We had New Mexico was going great guns. California was going great guns, building their economies, rebuilding their economies in the last decade with trade with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
on many levels. And of course, Mexico is not often too crazy about Arizona because of our rather draconian laws. And so there was a lot of mending fences. And have you thought about, is there anything in your area that Mexico, having this huge country so close to us, can help?
Absolutely. In fact, during my studies, I actually took a border course that was a 3-week intensive, and we traversed the border several times to understand the economy between, you know, on that border,
sure,
in the border territories. And it's so clear to me what the other states have done to advantage themselves. And that's mostly in investing in infrastructure to make it feasible for trade to be very easy. And so I think Arizona, there are a lot of people in the state that see that and that are working towards that goal. But, you know, they need support.
It seems in spite of government, not with government.
Exactly.
And that, you know, Fred's idea was, you know, boy, they could use some there are things that government can do to help.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, I think good policies make a difference. And if you compare California and Arizona, California was in much more economic trouble than Arizona was. And now it's revived. It's doing much better than we're doing. And I think that something that Mike alluded to and Gary is that the whole idea, I guess the governor's idea is to steal businesses from California. And California is doing just fine, so I don't know how that's going to work out this time. And so I like initiating other things. Are there other areas in agriculture or other development areas that the legislature could encourage? What about over in places like Payson and so forth and so on?
Sure. You know, I really think supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs is where it's at right now, along with supporting education to continue to build our attractiveness for companies. But I say, you know, building our economy from the inside is much less volatile than depending on huge companies to come in and provide jobs. You know, the little by little approach is going to be a better sustained effort with long-term employment and usually a good paying structure there. So supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs however we can, the angel tax credit system, and actually I have to, you know, give a little bit of credit to Governor Brewer in developing the Arizona Commerce Authority. That needs to be reauthorized and reinstated. It's sort of on hiatus right now. They were actually doing really good work to integrate what was happening on the state level and what was happening on the municipal level. I actually got a call from them when a manufacturer was thinking of leaving Jerome. They said they're looking for another place. You know, can you look at your real estate options? Can you find a way to keep this manufacturer in your municipality? That was really helpful, and it was one of the few examples of state really working together with municipalities, kind of across all levels, to ensure that.
Didn't I read that Ducey just fired the last one?
Did that
at the Arizona Commerce?
Yeah, at the AAED, the Arizona Association of Economic Development luncheon, I visited. That was one of their requests to reinstate it. So I'm, you know, they can have that request, and hopefully somebody will.
Just to
listening.
Be clear, you're telling us about all the great work that this organization did on commercial commerce in the state, and the current governor just disbanded it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Just being clear.
I'd like to ask about universities. In recent years, we've cut funding for universities pretty dramatically, and this is part of the problem with students graduating with huge amounts of debt. But I think there's a more serious issue with it. Is I believe universities are the jobs incubator for the state, any state. It's you know, California, I believe, has so many vibrant businesses because of its education system, because of its university
and community college.
Community college system. And I think that's something that is, personally, I think it's one of the worst decisions I've ever seen, is to cut funding for our universities and raise tuitions. And now, I think Fred Duvall was talking about most of a huge percentage of our graduates leave the state instead of staying here and building businesses.
Right. Yeah, there are so many issues there. But to be clear, the funding cuts were $100 million out of universities in the last legislative session. And right now, in this session, community colleges are fighting to keep their 1% state funding. They're mandated, the legislature's mandated to fund community colleges at 33% of their budget. And now they're fighting for
you
that
mean by
last
that thing, like the 1%. The Arizona Constitution, that little Constitution thing, that document that the Arizona legislature ignores on a regular basis. We could do like three shows
right.
on just things that the Arizona legislature has done that are totally against, by anybody's measure, the Constitution.
Yeah.
So let me get to, once again, to be clear.
Tuition is supposed to be as free as possible,
yes,
according to our state constitution. And they're not even trying to do that, are they, Mike?
And state support of education, state support of community college is 1%, and you're fighting for that. You know, I'm sorry, this is 2016. We are heralding, we are discussing the end of civilization here. When there's no more public support for higher education, Come on now, folks. I mean, you know, they did this in ancient Sumeria, for God's sakes. But so we're at 1%. Go ahead, Nikki.
Well, actually, I did a little research because I really feel strongly that the number one priority that, you know, people envisioned the legislature having was public education. And in fact, before we even had statehood, in our first territorial legislative session in 1864, there were only three priorities, and public funding for education was one of them. But back to what Gary said, you know, he hit the nail on the head as far as students having to leave Arizona. You know, we need to have an Arizona not just for kids to grow up in, but for kids to, you know, have careers in their adulthood and families of their own here. What's more is that when we do end up attracting economic development from out of state, you know where they're going to get their high-paid positions filled? Not from Arizona residents, because they don't have the qualifications. They're going to have to go out of state and bring people from out of state to get those high-paying jobs.
Which right. makes it very difficult to try to attract a business from out of state. Again, you know, it's so interlinked with the idea of building, you know, creating and nurturing our own startup businesses and building and, you know, industries around that, and then, you know, using the universities as incubators and community colleges to staff those businesses and improve those businesses.
I don't want to get too
that's
far.
That's how California rode out absolutely horrible, serious economic problems with when the Great Recession hit was the use of their universities, and they've recovered economically because of the of all the innovation in Silicon Valley, all over San Francisco, all over the north Northern California, as well as Southern California. They survived all kinds of crashes in the defense industry and so forth and so on because of their education system.
Start buying up Sedona.
I do want to give the governor and the legislature credit for one thing. They created or passed funding for a new private prison. So that's creating jobs, isn't it?
Well, that's what you're going to run into, Nick. I don't want to get too far from the economic thing, but mm-hmm. I want to give you a chance to talk about your campaign, what you got planned here. We're here to introduce Nikki Bagley to the world. And get you to talk about your campaign. What you're going to run into down there, because we've had other guests on this show, you're going to run into that. Education is viewed as a money-making proposition for their friends. Mm-hmm. For the friends and relatives of the Arizona legislature, education is not viewed as some sort of altruistic thing that's going to make the lives better of Arizona citizens. It's viewed as a way to make money, that they bundle it, they invest in it, and it has absolutely nothing to do with education. That's what you're going to be fighting against, is the income opportunities that people see, that legislators see in Arizona education and charter school education in general.
What shocks me, Mike, and I don't know, we need to have Nikki talk about her platform, what she's running on, is the fact that when this is exposed, nothing happens.
That's right.
You find out that the guy is just is making $100,000 a year off a program that he designed. It's just pouring money into his pockets. It's a corrupt program to start with. It gets exposed, Mike, Gary, everybody, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. People go, oh, well. And nothing happens.
Well, they think about, you're right. Joe Arpaio is on a statewide basis a perfect example of nothing happening. No matter how much money, $40 million, $80 million, you know, he gets costs the state in lawsuits, nothing happens.
Let's get back to Nikki's campaign.
Let's talk about Nikki's campaign.
What else?
What are your priorities?
What other priorities do you have?
Well, okay, so education is key, and of course every person running for office is going to say that. The sound bites sound a lot the same, between the incumbent and I, but the difference is I plan to vote to fund education, and not just private education, but our public education system. Economic development, we've talked a lot about that, and balancing our budget, prioritizing things so that, you know, we can take a well-rounded approach to finding success for our state in the future. fiscal responsibility, infrastructure investments, and, you know, also another thing that's sort of going on throughout the country right now is engaging the younger crowd in civic engagement. I really do want to be a senator that encourages young people to have a little faith in the political system.
We do want to mention that as we look around this room, Nikki is younger than any of us by 30 years, and so we're really excited about that. So, yeah, absolutely. I tell people that if you vote, then somebody will get elected. Your generation and has just been the millennials and Xers have been so turned off by the process.
Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the most important things we could do socially is to get the younger generation to understand that the country, the United States, needs their involvement in politics. That it's not all ugly or evil or something. There's lots of problems. But those problems, a lot of them could be solved by civic engagement of a new generation in those issues.
So, Nikki, you're on the radio today. What else are you going to do? What else you got planned?
Well, another issue that's close to my heart is just responsible management of our natural resources. I also just have to say we have to be taking a long-term approach to our natural resource management, from forest to mining, to taking a long-term perspective on that. So that's something that I feel passionately
about. We have this little thing running through the Verde Valley. We have a couple of them, actually. One that Sedona thinks is important is called Oak Creek, and the other is the Verde River.
Yes.
Oak Creek is important.
Well,
and I have a little bit of a background in water. When I was the mayor of Jerome, I was also the appointed person to be on the Water Advisory Committee, the Countywide Water Advisory Committee, which I took seriously, and also was on the board of the Verde River Basin Partnership. So I'm interested in taking proactive, progressive approaches to water management. Leaving it up to the state at this point is a little scary. I am going to encourage, you know, more local influence on issues like that, but certainly will encourage a discussion at the state level of what we can do to.
Well, someday I'd like to have you back on, and you can tell us how you're going to save the Verde River, because I believe that by the time that child of yours goes to school, well, goes to high school anyway, the Verde River could well be gone.
Right.
I would encourage, and I've done this before, everybody in listening to get out on the Verde River, go on one of these kayaking tours, go on a float trip, go down there and go fishing, go down there with your dog and let him swim in the water, whatever. Bring your kids down there for a picnic. It is absolutely beautiful.
Let me do a quick
the
plug.
The closer you get to it, the more you're on the Verde River, the more you can intuitively feel the importance of this river to our valley here.
Well, I say 85% of the Verde Valley has never been in, on, or at the Verde River. And the organization that I'm on the board of, the Verde River Valley Nature Organization,
hear about regularly.
We want to call it Verve Yes, but we're going to call it Verve No this morning. They do the bird festival, but they also do the Verde River Run, a kayak race from White Bridge to Beasley Platte, coming up sometime in late March. I believe it's March 22nd. But April is River Fest month. Forgetting that, of course, the Verde River Run, the kayak and canoe race is at the end of March. It's close enough to April for us to call. So please look for lots.
You can be a spectator for that, folks.
Absolutely.
You can go down and watch the races. It's a trip.
Look for lots of events. April is River Fest month. There's schedules being published in the papers and things like that. There's all going to be all kinds of – because, yeah, that's the whole idea is to make people aware of this resource and get it going.
Sure, and I would encourage people to get out on the river as well. But even if they never make it out there, you know, one important thing to remember is what a huge economic impact it would have on our valley if that river dried up. I mean, just think about property values alone. So protecting it, absolutely a great resource and recreational gem for us. But also there's another economic picture there that we really need to be protecting.
It's let's put it this way. If it dries up, we'll have to change the name of the valley. It'll no longer be Verde. So you're a recently announced candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just getting your campaign started. What are the next steps? I assume, are you running clean or are you...
That's a good question. I actually, I am running as a traditional candidate, so I would absolutely love if everyone out there would consider contributing to my campaign. But I also do support the Clean Elections movement. You know, I have background in fundraising, so I feel like I have skills that I can put to use in that department, but not everybody does, and I don't think it should be a requirement to be a legislator to have a fundraising background.
And are you, I assume you're out seeking signatures for petitions to get on the ballot?
Yes,
I am. And do you have a website folks could go to?
It is under construction, so I just ask if people visit that they are a little bit lenient on me, but it should be really functional. I don't think the contribute button works yet, but people can go to www.nikki4azsenate.com.
Or they could just bring their cash into the studio and we'll be sure
we'll make sure you get
we'll
it. Why don't you repeat the address for folks again, Nikki, just where they can, even if it's under construction, at least there's something there. And
it's nikki4azsenate.com.
Very good. So what's your next campaign stop? Issues notwithstanding, how are you going to get elected?
Well, I really just want to get out there and meet people and listen to people and let them know that, you know, they have a resource in me as a senator. I'm a great listener. I have good critical thinking skills. I absolutely will check my email, get back to my voicemails and consider the weight of what people are experiencing out there in my policymaking. So my next stop is going to be a fun one. I'm going to Holbrook for the Hashknife Pony Express, where they do the riders from Holbrook to Scottsdale. Take a look over there and meet people because, you know, I believe firmly that as a senator, I'd be representing everybody in the district, not just the people, the body who could get me elected. I'm not just going to be hanging out in Flagstaff because they're the biggest population center. I really do want to be representing Payson, Taylor, Snowflake, Holbrook, Joseph City.
We got to do Cornfest in Chino Valley. I've been on a few campaigns, and walking in the Cornfesting parade in Chino Valley is a...
I would point out that unlike your competitor, you actually live in our district. As far as I can tell, Sylvia Allen does not. I think she rents in the district.
I thought she had a tent somewhere in Canada.
I'm joking, folks.
It's one of the ironies that we keep putting in people in office that don't actually live in the districts that they're supposed to represent.
Well, there's such a frenzy for people with an R after the name on the ballots in Arizona that they can get away with stuff like that.
I think if you don't
make a big deal out of it during the campaign, we are.
So it would be really nice, I mean, not to be too chauvinistic here, to have a representative from the Verde Valley who's been in Verde Valley politics, who knows our issues here. And I know that that the most important thing is to be fair to the whole district, and so you have to have Flagstaff interests, you have to get up to Holbrook, you have to get over to Payson, which has a lot of great folks, and talk to them, and you have to get their issues as well as our Verde Valley issues. But it would be really nice to have someone from here actually representing us in the state legislature. It's been a very long time since
Tom Halloran
was in office that we've had anyone from the Verde Valley, anyone from even close to here in the legislature.
It just went right out. Any problems at work with your campaigning, with your candidacy?
I do have support from Yavapai College, but, you know, let me be clear. I take time off of work to do all of my campaigning.
Yeah.
So, if anyone questions that, it's all documented that I take time off of work and will continue to do so throughout the campaign. But I am holding that job down. It's going to be a challenge, but it's pretty important. I also care deeply about my work at Yavapai College and want to make sure that it's going to be successful as well.
Given that the community college funding is in jeopardy through the state legislature, it would behoove the college to support your candidacy in any way that they can.
There wasn't a whole lot of hesitation in the room.
I can imagine.
Well, the wine industry, you make a lot of contacts there. Flagstaff, as you said, where'd you go to school?
I actually am a Yavapai College graduate, so I studied agriculture at Yavapai College, and then I transferred to Prescott College and also studied agriculture there, becoming a bona fide soil geek. So if you ever want to talk about soil, I'm your lady.
We should do a whole program on soil sampling and stuff, and then that leads you into the wine industry,
right,
and where you grow grapes and all that. It's a very, very complicated business.
I went to Prescott High School.
Huh.
Yeah, but I actually lived in Chino Valley as well for a little bit during
high
school.
You know all about the Corn Festival.
I do,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
It's big time.
You're probably a former queen of the Corn Festival right here in our studio.
We have Angela Fever, who ran for your position just a few years ago, and you won't be able to hear Angela, but let me ask her. She has a question for Nikki that we should ask her.
Well, while she's coming up with that, the... I'd just like to point out that our sponsor is Democrats of the Red Rocks, and they have. I understand we gave the wrong information in our last show, but they have
TISC.
Yeah, they have a meeting coming up on Thursday, February 18th, and the speaker will be Paul Johnson, former Phoenix mayor. And they're going to be talking about the open primary.
Extremely interesting topic, by the way. I was listening to the Journalist Roundtable on Channel PBS the other day. Fascinating. We're going to talk about open primary. It's going to be a big deal. Angela, what do you got?
Hey,
right
well,
there, right there.
Okay, Nikki, first, I want to wish you all the best and good luck, which you need.
Thank you.
Having done this myself, it's a real challenge. I just one of the things I urge you to is get some really nice, comfortable walking shoes.
Already done. New Balance makes a really nice dress boot.
There you go. And it's a huge area to cover. That's the toughest. So be prepared and lots and lots of luck. I know there are a lot of people here who want to help and take advantage of that, because Sedona is a great place to get help.
That brings up a good question. Are you looking for volunteers for your campaign?
I am at this point. I've just sort of formed my committee, and now we're, trying to make a long-term calendar for the year here through November and look at how many people we need, what we can get them doing. So if you're interested, the one thing that is functional, I believe, on my website is the volunteer button.
Well, Angela's saying that canvassing, and we'll talk about, and we have talked before about techniques on this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's but tough, isn't it, Mike?
Well,
it's tough running.
But it's the one that works.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a couple of potential city council candidates. It is an election year, and it's all happening right now. And so, and I talked to incumbents, and you talk to incumbents, and they will tell you that canvassing, as hard as it is, as Angela said, and as you already know, it is important. People want to see you, and if you come to their
door. We have rubber soled shoes now, most of us, but it is shoe leather time.
Well, in the Arizona heat, though, you want to be careful of that, because you'll melt into the pavement.
It's so much work to run for office that I don't think people appreciate it enough, and there's an assumption that there's some big, pot of gold at the end of the campaign for the candidates. That's certainly not true for the state legislature. And so I think, we should support anybody who we remotely agree with to get out and run for state legislature, because it's certainly one of the biggest issues in Arizona.
All right, Nikki Check. Nikki Bagley is running for LD6 State Senate, former mayor of Jerome. You can find some information on a website. Just Google her name, see what you find. You can always find an address and send her a check.
It's P.O. Box 924, Clarkdale, Arizona, 86324.
Like I said, or you can drop a check off here and We will be
prefer at, cash.
We will
spend it on the wine.
We'll be drinking in sound bites, watching Tom. All right, so we got. Don't forget, folks, where you can hear this show and all our shows on vvid.org. Our podcasts are on vvid.org. You can hear all our old shows there. Please do so. Next week we have a progressive Democratic candidate running for the House of Representatives there in Washington, whatever they call that. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.